On this episode of the Fieldhouse Files, I'll talk with Chris Taylor, who has risen from basketball operations assistant with the Pacers to Mad Ants general manager. Then I'll be joined by Carlos Knox, who is back with the Indiana Fever as an assistant coach. And welcome into the Fieldhouse Files, the podcast where I take you behind the scenes with the Pacers, talk to individuals on and around the team, and tell you what you need to know. Well, the last few weeks have been a lot for the Pacers, as well for myself. The Pacers haven't won, and I went through a period where I tested positive for COVID-19 right after Christmas, and that caused me to miss some home games. Too many, in fact, for my liking. Three in total, which is not fun. I don't think I've missed three home games in the last three seasons, but that was strange. Being at home, having to rely on Zoom and watching home games from my place, all while being like a four iron from the field house and unable to go. And also, what was unusual about it is the NBA had not yet established return to, let's call it, right protocols, or protocols to return for media, those that are around these players and teams every single day. So I was talking with the Pacers, I was talking with NBA PR, trying to figure out, like, what exactly do they need? It's foreign territory, it's unknown, and now, since my period there, they have established some return to the job protocols, if you will, from reporters, and it's very similar to those that are around the team every single day, what they call Tier 1. But nonetheless, it was strange to kind of be a story, or I was able to at least turn it into a story, which I thought was interesting from my front, because I'm reporting on, you know, Justin Holiday, Rick Carlisle, many other players testing positive. Well, they're I had firsthand experience. I don't know what it's like to play an NBA game or answer questions from a podium like Rick Carlisle does after games, but I do know what it's like essentially to enter protocols and not be able to do your job to the full extent. There are workarounds, much like there were for the teams where, you know, the coaching staff was holding meetings on Zoom, but they're not in the same room, and it's not the same like me being 5 feet or 10 feet or talking and interviewing players or attending practices. It's just not the same. It's not fun, but we're all going through it. And at least for me, hopefully, it's past me. I have a full story at fieldhousefiles.com about that experience, plus a database of the players and coaches, keeping track of when they tested positive, when they got out, how many games did they miss, etc. And to this point, 11 players have tested positive, the entire primary coaching staff, and then some staff members currently are in it at this moment. The head athletic trainer is in it. No players at the moment, though. And since that time, we've had Lance's return. We saw him sign two hardship contracts in a standard 10-day as well. We've seen Malcolm Brogdon continue to miss time with a sore Achilles, and he is so upbeat about it. It's almost strange considering he does miss time with it. He says it continues to get better. It's feeling great. He's had conversations like I was talking with him about with Kevin Durant, a guy who suffered a ruptured Achilles, and that's the primary concern. And he says that it's mostly dependent on whether he plays, about how he feels that day, whether he's sore, how he wakes up, essentially. And so he's been questionable the last couple of weeks. He's played a couple times. He's sat out several more times. But the Pacers need consistency. They need reliability. And right now, Malcolm has not been that, unfortunately. And it's probably not the worst thing for him and for the team if he says, hey, you know what, let's take it easy for the next 3 weeks. Let's get through All-Star break and reassess his situation, especially where they are right now, where they haven't won a road game in 2 months, where they haven't won back-to-back games in quite a while, where they haven't won more than a game since Christmas, where they've lost 13 of their last 16 games. I think you get the point. It has not been good, and that's now given the front office and coaching staff some room to make trades, to tinker with the roster, to tinker with the starting lineup, to make changes, both sending players out and taking some in, but also with starting lineups and those sorts of things. We shall see. It's going to be really interesting. There's no doubt about that. That's what it's been like on a daily basis for me covering and reporting on this team. We've also had Miles Turner's injury, which now explains why he was so inconsistent the last couple of weeks, why he had frustrations both with his role and his performances, where he got this ain't P, and that could probably be an entire podcast if I wanted to. But he met with a couple doctors, one of the team doctors, and as I reported, he met with one once the team landed in Los Angeles, and it was determined that he has a stress reaction, which basically is an overuse injury. It's nothing substantial yet, but if he kept playing, then there would be great concern. Think of it as a bone bruise. Could become something worse, and that would be known as a stress fracture. It's not at that point, so he'll take it easy for the next several weeks. I think it's unlikely to see him for at least the first week in February. Then we'll see, and with the trade deadline approaching, now as of this recording, just about 3 weeks away, does he play in a Pacers uniform again? Does he even have Pacers even have to consider him returning from injury? Now, obviously, this is going to give opposing teams some pause as they're trying to consider whether to acquire him, and in doing so, Miles wants an extension. No doubt about that. So you have to weigh that into the conversation. He'll be in a contract year for next year if something doesn't get done and that deal get extended this offseason. So those are the different things that have to run through an opposing team's mind while trying to trade for a guy like Miles Turner, who wants a greater role, wants more of an opportunity, wants to be the lone center, which he hasn't been able to really do for 5 years, especially the last three where him and Domas have started together. But they've been together now on the same team for 5 years, and I can't blame him to want a fresh start and to go somewhere else and really try to make something more of his career, because right now he wants to get paid. Right now at, 25 years old, this could be his last big contract, and so that's important to him on top of trying to maximize his career, his potential, and seeing that through. But thankfully, Miles complained of something with his foot, not feeling right. They got it looked at, got a CT scan, and that revealed, I'm told, you know, nothing substantial yet, but it's thank goodness that they were able to do that test early. He will get an official test in a couple more weeks to see how he's coming along, very much like TJ Warren has. And yeah, what the hell? We're still waiting to see TJ Warren. It's been going on 13 months since he suffered that injury. I know there's a lot of rumors and speculation out there, and I know it's fun to sometimes get involved with those or think about it, but I can tell you right now, as of this recording, there's not been anything of substance or for anything worth sharing from my end. If I shared every single thing that I have heard or someone has checked in on or I've called about, that'd be exhausting. And on top of that, you got to realize there's daily conversations going on where, let's just take a random situation, player is available. They call X team, hey, are you interested? Team hangs up and says no. The team could offer something that doesn't make sense for either team. There's a lot of that, and there should be a lot of that. If you're seeing a lot of front office executives, this is part of their job, is to call around and see what either the value is for a player or what it's going to take to offload a player, because some teams want to get off contracts, while others, especially this year, you're seeing there's a lot more buyers, I think, right now, very few sellers, because how tight so many teams are in the standings. A couple nights ago, what was it, like the top seven teams in the Eastern Conference all had the exact same record? They all had like 27 wins. Unbelievable. That's one of the reasons the Pacers have significantly fell in the standings. It's not just they've gotten worse and all of that. It's also that everybody else around them has gotten better. Now, make sure you've joined the community at Fieldhouse Files and are subscribed so that you get every story that I write directly to your inbox. Right now, I'm almost writing daily because you have to. There is a lot going on. So you're getting daily coverage for $5 a month or $50 per year. Now on this podcast, first up is my conversation with Chris Taylor. He's from Maine, played college basketball, and has worked his butt off within the Pacers organization. Got a promotion moving up to the Mad Ants and taking on more responsibility in 2017, and now this season, for the first time, he's running that team. He's the GM, taking over from Brian Levy, who moved over to the Pacers in a scouting role where he's traveling a lot more, but less in charge of the G League affiliate for the Pacers. And the big news this summer that I broke on FieldhouseFiles.com is that the Pacers and the Mad Ants would share St. Vincent Center, that the Mad Ants would call Indy home, not Fort Wayne, for the first time. So they're practicing at the St. Vincent Center. Their apartments are, let's call it a 9-iron from the St. Vincent Center. They're right there. And very soon, they'll have a couple more games played nearby at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, where you can come and watch. It's open seating, cheap tickets, so if you want to see the Mad Ants, and possibility could be Goga Pitazze or Isaiah Jackson, maybe unlikely lately because Miles Turner being out, but nonetheless, you can see many of those players and check out the renovations made to the Fieldhouse as well, because the NBA and the Pacers, they leaned heavily on the G League to keep their seasons afloat after so many players had entered the protocol. So in this conversation with CT, we talk about that, his promotion, one player asking to be involved in the draft room, and much more. All right, as promised, I'm now joined by Chris Taylor, the general manager of the Mad Ants in his first season with that new title. And let's start there, CT. We talked to you, with you a little bit in training camp, and so much has transpired just in the last couple days, last month, and since training camp. But for you, this is a significant and step forward, step positive for you, being promoted within the Mad Ants to now general manager after several years, more so probably behind the scenes. Now you are the head guy. What has this meant to you personally, taking another step forward?
Yeah, thank you so much, Scott, for having me on. I'm glad it worked out after we discussed the components of the team and everything at training camp and media day, which feels like years ago, but yeah, it was just a few short months ago. You said a positive, which is, I think that's the only case in our current world where you can say positive and it actually means a good thing.
You're right. You're exactly.
Yeah, really excited to have the general manager title. Certainly something I've been working towards since I got here to the Pacers organization as a basketball ops intern back in the summer of 2012, which feels like another life ago with the amount that I've learned and the, you know, tremendous amount of basketball knowledge that, you know, I've been able to be around and have just tried my best to be a sponge and kind of absorb all the genius that I've had a chance to be around with the incredible people that I've worked for the Pacers over the course of those years. So it's great. It's definitely presented some challenges as we were just discussing off air, that the continued pandemic has thrown it from the team setting. But at the same time, it's exciting just to, cause you're learning something new. I would say it magnifies even from day to day. It's almost minute to minute. You're learning something new. So can't really complain in that regard.
Now you got promoted after Brian Levy, the former general manager, moved over to a scouting role with the Pacers. I'm curious, obviously he was kind of your boss the last couple of years, but also what level of influence has he maybe had on you as you've taken on this new challenge? And I'm sure you guys still communicate almost every day, probably just talking basketball.
Yeah, for sure. I think Brian and I's relationship has grown tremendously since he brought me on a handful of years ago, first as the director of basketball ops here when I transitioned from the Pacers full time to jumping on board with the Mad Ants. He's taught me a wealth of knowledge over the years and still a trusted confidant. I always joke, I'm trying my best to give him a little bit of space so I don't annoy him, with calls or texts on a daily basis. But we're just texting earlier today just about some players because he's still with that new scouting role. He's not just doing NBA teams. He's also covering G League teams. So obviously has a great pulse on the current, conditions of the G League. And he knows players and he knows the league itself better than anybody else that I've ever discussed with, from the team setting or even at the league setting. So he's a tremendous point of contact for us just as our team, as we continue to grow. I hope I don't annoy him as much as we talk, but I think our relationship is as strong as ever, and I really appreciate his continued guidance even in the new role that he has.
One of the biggest things that transpired over the offseason in terms of your team with the Mad Ants is making Indy kind of the focal point, being back home here. And so, I mean, your players right next door to the practice facility in terms of where they're staying, and they have 24-hour access to this, where it was a little bit more complicated up in Fort Wayne, and you guys practice at that facility. And as we've seen over the last 3 weeks, the NBA would not have gone on if not for the help of G League players, and that's a different conversation. But walk me through kind of what it has been like for you guys being at the St. Vincent Center, having access to that, and on top of that, being around the Pacers every single day. And that probably really gives these players something to aspire to and even guys to learn from.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's a great point, a great question associated with it. I think the first word that comes to mind is certainly appreciative of this opportunity for our team to be here in Indy. To be honest, we had a great setup in Fort Wayne too, especially compared to some other G League situations across the country. For having our own practice facility through our sponsorship there in Fort Wayne and having almost 24/7 access there where our guys could get in the gym with our coaching staff and get better from a player development standpoint. You know, we had a weight room, our own separate facility, and then we'd play our games at the Coliseum. So it's not always the case with every G League market. So we were definitely fortunate there. But to have the chance to come here to Indy, it made the most sense from a COVID standpoint, since we're all in the same protocols and we're all, kind of tier one from the NBA's eyes, to be here for testing and whatnot for, I think, the health and safety of our players and staff. Definitely just that appreciation mindset has overflowed, I think, with our team. When we had our introductory luncheon at the start of the season, when I was presenting the team, I said, hey, there's never been a better time to be a G League player. And I think initially that was more just based on our proximity to the Pacers, and the NBA parent club here initially. You touched on the fact that the guys can walk to and from their apartments, to the practice facility in our locker room here with the Pacers, but then also G League rules have shifted a little bit. Players no longer have roommates. They all have their own apartments.
They're not huge. Yeah.
They don't have to share rooms on the road. So it's those little things that at the G League level really go a long way. But with that, in saying there's never been a better time to be a G League player, you fast forward, a couple months, and then all of a sudden the G League is really keeping the NBA afloat with throughout the bevy of positive tests and NBA players going into protocol. So many of these G League players, especially with us specifically, we've set a franchise record for the amount of call-ups in a season so far. We still have 2+ months to go. That really rings true. Just there's never been a better chance, a better time to be here playing in the G League. You get that NBA opportunity that all of us are working for. It's something that, hey, as a staff and an organization, we constantly preach, we want all of our players and staff too, but to find ourselves in better basketball situations at the end of our time here with the Mad Ants. And, whether that means taking the step to get to the NBA or taking the step, getting a great contract overseas, or even if you're a bench player or a role player and then improving your own skill set to then, if you come back next year and you're a starter or a high-level contributor, that's what it's all about. So to be able to see these guys who worked so hard throughout, even from training camp or have played with us in the past, that have Mad Ants jerseys on going out every day in the G League schedule, to then turn around and they have an opportunity to be with an NBA team, whether it's, a 10-day or the COVID hardship roster spot, whatever it may be, that's really what it's all about.
And right now there's probably no better example here locally than Kiefer Sykes, a guy that was at 28, was willing to go to Summer League, was then at Pacers training camp, suffered a slight injury, was actually kind of replaced, right, with Brad Wanamaker, but willingly went and played with Mad Ants and led the whole G League in assists, proving his point, right? And now landed his first NBA contract. What have you seen from him over the last couple of months? And him, like so many across the league, getting this unique opportunity and turning it into a good positive.
Yeah, he's the pinnacle of that right now. And Kiefer's story is amazing. But that comes down to a player that truly bets on himself, that knows he has what it takes and believes in himself and has the network around him that also, helps believe in him. Like you said, a vet that's played overseas and, played in the TBT and everything else throughout the course of his career, but never had that true NBA opportunity. And was like, hey, I'm going all in this year. I'm going to, like you said, play Summer League. I'm going to give the G League a try and prove to teams that I have the skill set, and the mindset and everything else that proves that I can play at the NBA level. And look, I mean, he came out and had a career high playing at Madison Square Garden the other night with the Pacers. I mean, that's like fairy tale stuff, right? Kiefer, he was fantastic to work with from our perspective. Again, like you said, leading the G League in assists when he played with us. And I think people get caught up with the G League thinking that it's all about getting your own stats that then NBA teams will notice and bring you into their system. But it's more about fit, right? I think but assists are one of those things. If you're leading the league in assists, that just means that you're making your teammates better and that you can fit in on any team. And Kiefer proved that. And again, going back to having the chance to be here in Indy this season, you know, routinely Pacers executives and the coaching staff have a chance to peek in and watch our practices here at SVC. You know, I can see that Kiefer's putting the work in on a daily basis. It wasn't just, you know, he wasn't going through the motions and then just happened to be performing during games because some of his teammates were making shots. Like, Kiefer was in here nonstop, getting better, proving to everybody that he, you know, again, had what it takes. And couldn't be more happy for Keef. I mean, that's he elevated the entire organization and has helped kind of put the Mad Ants on the map, I think, with his play. And yeah, we couldn't be happier for him.
You mentioned something cool that obviously we don't see, but so you are seeing, you know, Pacer executives or maybe a coach or two stop by, watch these practices, see a guy like Keef or Dwayne Washington or, you know, I don't know, whoever on down the list you want to go to, Benny Boatwright, just practicing and seeing the potential those guys could become.
Yeah, that's the great part. We work our schedule around the Pacers' schedule. So if the Pacers go in the morning, we'll try our best to get out on the court, you know, later on in the afternoon once things clear out. So, yeah, I think it's a nice distraction for some of the people that are here at work. You know, if you don't have a chance to step away maybe for Pacers practice, there's some more action going on. You can just sneak down and, you know, sit on the court or even just, you know, how it is here in the practice facility where it's all just windows. You're kind of out there in the fishbowl.
Yep.
On the practice court. So, you know, can pull the blinds up or whatever and look out of your office window and see our coaching staff and our players and getting after it on a daily basis. And I don't think that's any surprise then that, you know, guys like Nate Hinton and Justin Anderson, you know, along with Terry Taylor being converted to a two-way, that those guys have received those, you know, those opportunities because on the daily basis, you're able to see the work that they're putting in.
And the cool thing about that, and for some maybe, you know, life-altering to a smaller extent, is those guys for that 10-day will be compensated more in that 10 days for the NBA and give them that experience and exposure than with the G League. So that's a nice financial boost for those guys as well, in addition to being able to compete against some of the better players in the NBA and learn from the NBA head coaches and those sort of things. And the other thing I like in all this CT too is being around is your head coach, Tom Hankins. I mean, he was behind the bench the other night. He's able to be in all the meetings and learn from Rick Carlisle and his staff. And in doing so, you kind of have that, I don't know, symmetry or consistency between the two levels. And so when Kiefer Sykes or Dwayne or Nate Hinton, whomever, gets promoted and goes up with the Pacers, most of the terminology and what they're trying to get accomplished is very similar, which probably makes things much easier for those guys.
Without question, that's something that we've always tried to do in the past as well. But being here does make that a little bit easier. You're more up to date. Ironic you bring that up. I was just at our practice earlier today. We were on the Fever court just because that's what was available, and was talking with Justin Anderson, who just came back after that 10-day with the Pacers. And we were just kind of joking that, yeah, like all the play calls are exactly the same from us to the Pacers. And that's, you know, that's no surprise. That's there by design, just so when guys can fluidly, you know, transition not just the two ways, but who knows what other assignments might be the case. Goga's played with us. You know, Isaiah Jackson's played with us a couple times. That's in place to help our players improve so that there's nothing lost in translation and prepare them for the big show, so to speak. And that's something that we constantly harp on.
Other than Kiefer, leaving him aside, because I think Pacer fans have seen what he can do and what he's been able to accomplish, is there a guy or two that we should watch more of your team that should be highlighted or is having a really good season right now? I know if someone in your spot or a coach hates to single out a guy, but I am curious if a guy in your mind has popped, say, this season.
Yeah, it's a great question. I could easily go down our entire roster and, you know, biasly tell you something about each guy individually. But Gabe York is a player that comes to mind.
That's a guy you drafted.
His record. Yeah, that's probably no surprise I brought him up. But, yeah, he set our franchise record for most three-pointers made in a game. he had a chance. It seemed like he was going to get a call up with the team in the NBA, but then there was some unfortunate COVID related stuff that happened. But I think, you know, he's a, any day now, wouldn't surprise me if we got a call and Gabe had that opportunity to have his first chance to suit up for an NBA team. He's shooting at an incredibly high clip. He's proven to us this year that, I think in the past it was more perceived that he was, you know, score first, kind of shooting guard. But when we drafted him this year, number three overall in the G League draft, you know, in that first initial conversation, he voiced that he wanted to prove to teams that he had a chance to, you know, play a little bit more combo position, could handle the ball, get his teammates involved, you know, and still score, which obviously he's shown, but there's so many more facets to his game. So he's a guy that comes to mind for sure.
Gabe York, got to keep an eye on him then, for sure. I do want to go back to training camp, a conversation we had, but I think this would be really interesting to fans because not only do these players have to concern themselves with where they're at and their family as well, but start thinking ahead to life after basketball. And one player who did that recently was Justin Anderson. He was obviously recently up with the Pacers on a 10-day hardship contract and has returned. But in right before training camp, you guys talked and said, hey, come on into the draft room. Be part of this with us. So there at the St. Vincent Center for the draft, he was right there with you. And take me through that conversation and his involvement for that day.
Yeah, that's going back in the archives, it feels like now. But
right.
Yeah, that was the first for me, for sure, where a player had, ahead of time anyway, openly come up and said, you know, I'm not exactly sure everything that goes into preparation for a draft, and but specifically the G League draft. You know, would you mind if I was just kind of a fly on the wall and just kind of learned about the process? I'm trying to figure out, you know, life after basketball and just kind of interested in everything, whether it's broadcasting or maybe front office or coaching, you know, might kind of strike my fancy. So, you know, would you mind? And that was fantastic for us just to hear that, you know, somebody is invested in the organization and also just wants to learn and kind of better themselves going through some different experiences. So welcome Justin in with open arms. And it worked out, you know, timing wise, because he was here with the Pacers during training camp and decided to stay here in Indy in between before the Mad Ants training camp started. He was just training every day. So he was here. And then G League draft was on the 23rd, I believe. And then training camp kicked off on the 25th. So he, you know, was in town and came in, you know, just sat him down, kind of went through some of the players that we were targeting and just kind of tried to brief him as much as we could, just kind of how a G League draft normally goes with communication between teams and talking trades and just kind of the whole process. You know, he was very attentive and it was great for us too, because he had some insights that we didn't know, whether it was some guys that he worked out with over the summers or players that he's played with at different spots along his career, you know, it could kind of give us the little insights that from a staff side, we wouldn't necessarily know. I think if I remember correctly, he had some insider info on who was being drafted a couple spots after us that we hadn't quite heard yet, but
excellent.
He happened to, he had a connection and had worked out with the player in the off season, either this year or the previous year. So he just kind of knew or had a good feel for where it was going, and he was right. So it was fun. It was fun for everybody, I think. And, you know, he said that he really appreciated it and he learned a lot. So that was a unique experience of the G League.
Yeah. And as we all know, info is king here. And so that had to be cool for him to be, you know, at that rectangle conference room with you guys, not only following along, but chiming in when he could or needed to, or even ask a question like that. But I was really impressed by that. I know Tamika Catching several years ago worked more directly in player development and I don't know what's next for players in the transition period. And so there's a guy like that already thinking ahead. And yeah, you love to see things like that, right?
For sure. Yeah. And the league itself has placed a tremendous emphasis kind of on that off-court player development or trying to just kind of ignite some interest, I think, for players for what life after basketball will consist of. It was either two or three seasons ago, they've had a player development, you know, kind of contact in place for each team. And then at the league level, they've really been heavily involved with just urging teams to start those conversations with players or put some, you know, programming or having special guests come in and just kind of talk about, you know, everything. That could be financial literacy, it could be, you know, real estate, could be, you know, anything about having, you know, who to trust in your circle. All those type of things are, they're all beneficial, right? And that's, clearly Justin had listened to some of those programs over the course of the years, and it was fun to see.
In addition to having kind of Indy be home base, it also means your guys are using the facility, and that includes Bankers Life Fieldhouse. Or, there I go again, Gainbridge Fieldhouse, for what was 9 games. I think you had 2 so far canceled or postponed. I don't know what the official word will be on that, but it's special for them to get that opportunity. One, do you know anything? Will those 2 games that were postponed be rescheduled at the Fieldhouse? And secondly, maybe the biggest question for some Mad Ants fans is, are we going to get the Atlanta G League team so we can get Gans back here for a homecoming?
I think we're still waiting for official word on the league. Our hope is that those games that we missed during the kind of COVID postponement will be rescheduled for later in the season. I know we have a few breaks in the action in March. February is pretty full for us, you know, or could maybe they could sneak them in at the beginning of April before the playoffs start. That's our hope. But we had 4 games postponed. So that, you know, 4 more opportunities for our players to get out there and show what they have for NBA teams. And yeah, with that, one of the games that was postponed was when we had the little Coach Gansey reunion going
Yes,
against the
College
College Park
Park.
Skyhawks. So yeah, our hope is that those will be rescheduled. If not, you know, we do play down in College Park at the start of next month. So we'll see. We'll at least see Gansey at one point.
Yeah, but we need to get him back here for sure. And he always wanted to play at the Fieldhouse, so I thought that could have been special as well. I'm curious, as your role as general manager, how much of your time would you say right now is being spent with COVID-related things, whether it's your players being called up, whether it's bringing guys in? Because for those who may not have followed, you've been very busy over the last couple weeks. Brought back Walt Lemon Jr. Steph Hicks was here for a couple games. DJ McCall even brought in for a couple of games as well. And you brought in a couple other guys and then waived them and that sort of thing. What has that been like for you here in the last couple of weeks, and especially now as you guys are trying to restart your season?
Yeah, it's been hectic. And, you know, even outside of kind of COVID-related issues, we always joke that you just really never know what's going to come up during the course of a day, or that, you know, it could easily be 80 or 90% of what you're dealing with might not be basketball related, or like strictly basketball related. It's more of the operational or just kind of behind the scenes details that we all have to work through. And COVID has certainly presented some different hurdles, you know, than we've ever experienced before. It does feel like there's been a little bit of a revolving door with players that have been wearing Mad Ants jerseys. But if you look at if you kind of canvas the league as a whole, we've had less issues than a lot of other teams.
Good.
So there's a silver lining in that. And with that, I think that's how we've tried to embrace the positive of the whole situation, and recognize that, you know, with some of these hurdles, there's also a lot of opportunities presented by that. You know, like you said, with the chance to have Walt back in a Mad Ants uniform with us, and Steph kind of used it as a springboard to get a fantastic opportunity overseas, that, you know, he's playing. Wish him the best. But yeah, it was great to have DJ McCall back with us for a couple games, or eight, yeah, a couple games, and who knows what the future holds there. So it's certainly been hectic. I think you're just constantly, you know, refreshing the page on the G League roster site, just to see, you know, who's active, who's been waived, who's cleared waivers, you know, if it makes sense positionally to bring somebody new in. And then obviously communicating with our medical staff just to make sure that when we get tested every day, you know, knock on wood, nobody's fallen into COVID protocols with a positive result. And if that's the case, you figure out how to get through it. One of the bigger things that are kind of the marquee mindsets that we've had since day one, we decided it's to be adaptable. You know, that's just kind of the word that we use, no matter what it is. That comes with being based here in Indy, then still playing some games at Fort Wayne, or you know, we normally practice here at SVC, but sometimes, like I said, today we practice on the Fever practice court. We've been out on the main court, you know, bouncing between a few different locker rooms. And COVID has presented those obstacles as well. But it's just be adaptable. And embrace the grind. You know, this is all part of the journey. of helping us all get to that better basketball situation. So it's you can look at every situation in two lights, right? It's either a negative or a positive. So why not try our best to make things positive?
One of the great positives has been Lance Stephenson returning, and you obviously go back with him just like I do because we were here during his previous stints. And what have you seen from him? And I mean, it's been much of the same, but I think more of a mature player since his last visit.
Yeah, definitely. When I first came in 2012, obviously that was peak Lance with those great teams going to the Eastern Conference Finals. So I had a chance to get to know, you know, that version almost 10 years ago. And then when the Pacers had picked Lance back up the second time, I was actually the guy that was in the car service that met him at the airport. And then we had to take him to all of his medical and doctor's appointments. So I had a chance to get to know him, you know, a lot more after being with him in a car for a couple of days, which was really neat. And then we actually, when we played Grand Rapids Gold, Denver's affiliate, just before the showcase, Lance was with them. That was before he'd gotten that first call up with Atlanta. So I had a chance to talk to him in Grand Rapids, you know, and just kind of catch up on the family and all kind of the off court stuff, but then also had a chance to see firsthand that he still can bring it. He still has something different and can perform at the NBA level. So when I heard news that he was going to have the chance to come in here just after the holidays, I was really excited, you know, for him, but also just because, as we've all seen, that fan component, he injects so much life into whatever situation he's in. He's a positive energy, you know, and just has, it's infectious, right? You see our bench, everybody's up there jumping around. Had the same conversation with Nate Hinton, who's a similar positive energy for us with the Mad Ants. Okay. You know, whether he's on the court or on the bench cheering on the team, it's like he influences everybody else around him to be energetic and bring something different. You know, and that's Lance to a T. I was at the Celtics game last night. You know, you just love to see it. He gets that kind of Lance mindset going where he starts skipping with the ball after a big rebound or whatever it may be, and you just know something good is going to happen. So it's been fun to see.
Proudly from Maine, played basketball at Emerson College and worked for the Red Claws, the Celtics, the Pacers here, now running the Mad Ants. At what point did you know I want to work in basketball after college?
Oh, man, it, for as long as I can remember, okay. That's always been the goal. And I think from talking to a lot of other people, it's like, for me, it wasn't just strictly, hey, I want to work in basketball. You know, I didn't, some people are like, hey, I'd like to get into coaching or scouting or whatever it may be. But for me, it was always the NBA. I didn't really have any interest in working at the college level. You know, if that's what it came down to be around the game, no question, I would take that. But yeah, the goal for me was always to work in the NBA, and I always had the desire to be on the front office. Didn't exactly know the path that it would take to get there, but I was trying my best to put myself in a position to make that attainable. So yeah, like you said, when I was playing in college in Boston, had an unbelievable chance to first intern with the Celtics. I was on the business side, but it helped really get my foot in the door. That's where, you know, I met a lot of people with different teams, would always just try to pick the brains of anybody from visiting teams that were in the Garden, just to kind of find out their own path or any advice that they may have. Yeah, looking back, some of the best connections that I'd made was with the Pacers. I just didn't really know it at the time, but you know, continued to keep in touch and kind of nurture those relationships. And hard to imagine, you know, that I was given the full time opportunity back in 2012 and then have still remained with the organization. So just incredibly thankful. Like I said at the beginning, like, and you know, from being here for so long as well, there's been some incredibly high level people that have come through, you know, still work for the Pacers, but then have also worked for the Pacers over the years. So it'd be foolish of me not to sit back and just appreciate the amount of basketball knowledge that I've been able to, you know, kind of be privy to, just whether sitting in a room or actually having and being part of the conversation.
Good stuff, CT. I appreciate it. One of the things I like being in this role is the ability to highlight those that maybe don't necessarily get it. I'd include yourself in that, individuals like Kelly Kroskoff, Vance Catlin, Ryan Carr, those are guys in the scouting department, but you're sure one of them. So not only did I want to talk Matt Ants, but also about yourself and the path you've taken to get to a leadership role where you're running a team right now. So that's been really cool. And for fans that want to check out, Pacer fans want to see your team here in Indianapolis at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, January 25th and 27th are the next couple of dates. So those should be fun.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you so much, Scott. I appreciate the opportunity. And as always, you know, look forward to seeing you at the field house. And any fans that are listening, Fort Wayne's just a short 2-hour drive north as well. So we're more than welcome to welcome you at the Coliseum. You can see our guys up close and personal. And yeah, like you said, at the field house as well.
My thanks to CT, who has been around the field house for a decade now. He's one of many who deserves some more shine. And so I was happy to give that to him and give him a platform to talk right here on this podcast. I appreciate executives willing to share and take us through their mindset and the different things that go on in their world every single day. Now, next up is another familiar name. It's Carlos Knox. He's in the IUPUI Athletics Hall of Fame. He's close with players like George Hill and Tamika Catchings. I actually first met him many decades ago when I was helping Tamika Catchings out during her workouts, and those would often be run by Knox himself. Now, he's returning to the Fever as an assistant coach, which allows him to come back here to Indy, what he refers to as his second home. This conversation was taped a couple months ago at the end of November before I wrote my story about Carlos, but right now they're in the middle of free agency, and the draft will pick up here in a couple of months, and they have an important pick right there at the top of the WNBA draft, and Knox then will be charged with coaching them as well as working in player development. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. Now joined by Carlos Knox, a name you're probably familiar with, but we haven't heard from in quite a while. Well, that's going to change. You're going to start hearing from him more often because he's coming right back here to Indianapolis, where really established himself as a player at IUPUI, going into the Hall of Fame and such, working with Tamika Catchings, working for the Fever, and with so many young talents as well, because he's coming back as an Indiana Fever assistant coach starting this week. And so, Carlos, first of all, congratulations on your new gig, and catch us up. What have you been up to? What has life been like for you here in the last couple of years? Most recently, I know, serving on the staff at Cincinnati Women's Basketball.
Yes, yes. Thanks, God. I appreciate it. well, yeah, one of the things I've been up to, I actually tried my hand at college basketball when I left the Fever. And, that was in 2017. I ended up going to University of North Texas, coached there for 3 years. And then I took I took a shot at University of Cincinnati, and I was there for 2 years. So it's been a wild road to the college scene, but it's been a fun road, and we've really had an enjoyable time. I really like the college game, and it was one of those things that I just got educated from a lot of different angles.
What did you find was the biggest difference, change, or adjustment that you had going from the pros to the college game? And full disclosure, you've worked with players at all kinds of levels, from high school to college to pro. So you've worked with them all, but working for a college team, you have very different interests, meaning you have to make sure they're going to classes and take care of their food, whereas pros, they kind of handle that stuff on their own.
Exactly. Well, just to be frank, one of the things is it's always a challenge when you talk about bigger, stronger, quicker athletes, mm-hmm. and then, you know, going to a place where that is not the case. So coming from the pro game, it was a lot of people that were, you know, definitely just great athletes. They come from big time programs. They were able to come right in and transition as pros. And then you go to a mid-major college, and most young ladies don't have that type of ability. So it made it fun because it came down to you coaching the game and really developing players at a high level, just to try to see if you could get them to a place where as a team they could really focus and push through to make some good progress. So by far it was one of my most challenging things that I've done in the game of basketball, but overall it was a very, very fun experience. But I realized one thing for sure, you know, the pros is where I belong. Mm-hmm. That's something that I really truly put all my blood, sweat, and tears and two, as a player and as a coach. I'm really ecstatic to be back with the Fever.
Yeah, and the number one thing also is back with Tamika Catchings, who is leading and guiding that franchise in the front office and such. And how many hours? Countless hours. I mean, hundreds. We probably spent in the gym, us three, me, you, and Ketch, back in the day. And a lot of the stuff was skill development, which I'd love to get into. But first, just talk me through how this came about. I assume Ketch reached out to you. You pondered it and considered and realized, hey, I want to get back to pros. And so that's why you're returning.
Well, absolutely. One of the things that me and Kat shared for years is just the passion, the desire, the focus to win. Mm-hmm. Like you said, countless hours in the gym, but more than anything, she's just a great hard worker. And, you know, we match in that area. So with her going through the ups and downs at the Fever and me being in the college game, obviously we talk every other day. We text every other day. She keeps up with me. I keep up with her. And just we know what type of team we are together. And that's a great team. We've always had success together. So when she called, you know, I listened. And when I talked to her, you know, we always – get down into the meat and potatoes of what's really going on. And one of the things she needed was a person that could come in and be on our team, and not only be on our team, but, you know, just have a good eye for the game, good eye for, get a sense for the team and what the team needed. And then, you know, just talking with her about Marianne, that was something that was very intriguing to me, because I love Marianne as a head coach. I've seen her do some phenomenal things on the pro level, so I definitely wanted to be a part of that as well. And then to say the less, Vicky Hall and Jerry Simpson are people that I'm mm-hmm. very, very familiar with. So it was really a great way for me to come back in and be comfortable enough to where we can move this franchise back in the right direction.
And that's what it's all about right now. It needs to see progress, needs to see those wins again, and get back to the expectation that goes beyond just making the playoffs, which is what we knew when both myself and you were there, and that really when Ketch was there, because when she was playing, that was not just the expectation. That was, you know, the finals was really the true goal. How much talk about the head coach, Marianne Stanley, came over from the Washington program a couple years ago and trying to build up this Fever program again. What, if anything, do you know about her? Are you learning about her over these last few weeks when this opportunity came about?
Well, Marianne, obviously, she has a big name in the WNBA. And if you follow women's basketball like I follow it, mm-hmm. You know, but not very hard to pick up on her being one of the elite coaches. So I like to study. I like to study the game and study the great coaches. She was an integral part of them winning the championship when she was there. And that was one of the things that I really admire about her. So when Ketch talked about hiring her, it was really just a no-brainer. It was one of those things where I was very excited and happy for Ketch, because I felt like she made the right decision. And again, you know, there's ups and downs to the game. Marianne, you know, she hasn't had the success that she's had, you know, before, but at the same time, she's on the right track because she has players that are in place. She has some good pieces. And now adding me, I just really feel like we're going to be able to do some great things together, as well as the rest of the coaching staff. But I can't say enough good things about Marianne. She's a class act, mm-hmm. and she really speaks highly of, you know, the organization, the team, Ketch, and actually myself. So, you know, I think we'll do great things together.
I know you've been really busy as an assistant coach with the Cincinnati women's basketball program, but I'm curious, have you yet been able to make it back into New Gainbridge Fieldhouse and see the new facilities, the new practice court, the new locker room, and those sorts of things that have been upgraded here over the last year?
Oh, yes, I did. I got a chance to come back and kind of do it. It was actually amazing, because I remember.
It's a game changer, man. So much better, so much different, so much more improved.
It is. You know, what's crazy is I think we went from Conseco to Banker's Life. You remember?
Oh, absolutely.
Like when we were coming up, it was Conseco Fieldhouse, and then it changed to Banker's Life. So that was kind of, I don't know, to see it be another name this quick, it just kind of tripped me out a little bit. But it was perfect for me to come in and see all the new additions. It's actually incredible. It looks like a smart arena.
Oh, 100%. And it's just more functional and makes a lot more sense in terms of how they utilize space and raise the court and then put the locker room and a weight room and coaches' offices underneath it. It's way more functional. Yeah. And I'm guessing you've been able to go across the street here over the last 3 or 4 years since it's been there with the Pacers' new practice facility. And you worked with a lot of Pacers in the past, in particular George Hill. So he was here earlier this week when the Pacers played the Bucks, which was cool to always see him. But there was a lot of a lot of guys like him, Sam Young, I remember you working with. There's several others, but you made yourself available to not just catch, but so many in this area, and even it extended towards the Pacers, right?
Absolutely, yes. That's one of my things that I just always focused on as a player development guy. It was just such a pleasure to work with those type of guys. Actually running the Indy Pro-Am, that was one of the things that, you know, kind of drew them, attracted them to me as well. Just watching my Pro-Am and being a part of it, you know, from the Lance Stevensons to the Eric Gordons, Gordon Hayward, all those guys were just so in tune with, you know, playing successful, safe environment basketball games in the Pro-Am. And it just allowed us to train during the week. So, you know, I always had a great relationship with Kevin Pritchard, you know, whoever was the head coach at the time, Nate McMillan, from Brian Shaw to Frank Vogel. I just had a great relationship with everybody that was always a part of our organization. So it's one big family now with the Pacers organization. So it's always very unique, but at the same time very welcoming.
Yeah, and to that point, I always thought it was cool how you were welcome. You know, I think it was Frank Vogel at practices, and so you'd be there taking notes, and Stephanie White may even be there with you, or things like that, so you can not only be around those guys, but also take notes of how they're doing things and try to grab from them as much as coaches, you know, joke that they steal from each other, right? Whether it's plays or organizational concepts or culture setting things. And so I thought that was cool to see you for at least a couple seasons. I remember you just randomly be at practices and observing.
Of course. Yeah. And a lot of times I would get permission from the head coaches just after creating relationships and kind of talking basketball, you know, the respect level as being on the professional level as a coach, it's kind of like, okay, man, you know, we're here for each other. So I've never had a problem making a friend, so to speak, or making sure that I'm in tune with everybody that's around me, because I love the game so much. I respect the game so much, and it has been so wonderful to me in life. So a lot of times, you know, coaches talk amongst each other and they get that sense or that feel for it just being something great amongst us. And, you know, they openly invited me to practices at all times, and it was never a time where I couldn't attend. Yeah, all the way back to Jim O'Brien, to be honest.
Is that right? Okay, that's fair. Yeah. Man, that's been a while, a couple decades now we're talking there, but that speaks to you being present, you being around, and having the respect of those that matter within the organization over the years, as you said, no matter whom was in charge over those years. You did bring up earlier, and I was going to get to it, was that the Knox Indy Pro-Am, which was terrific. I think it went 7 years before you had to finally cancel it because you moved on to North Texas. There was even a year hiatus, and then it returned, I think, for 7 years. But that was just a great offering in the off season for one, for fans to see some basketball countless times. Lance Stevenson, Chris Copeland, all those different guys you rattled off. I remember even so many of the Indiana basketball guys getting permission to come down and participate in that. And so with Pacer players or IU players allowed to play in it, that says a lot about what those teams think about you and the respect they have, because they're not just going to go let their players play in any old league during the summer. What went into that decision and jump-started you to launch that and run that for, I don't know, about 7 years and even bring on several different sponsors each year?
Well, I always tell this story because it's so amazing, to be honest. I used to train at a Post Road church on Post out east, Indianapolis, and we would have training sessions all the time where we would have different pros in, you know, from George Hill to Fred Jones to Danny Granger, Ron Artest. All those guys were coming out there to my training sessions as well as, you know, just open gym. So one of the things that happened was when we would start to leave our sessions, you know, each person would kind of just sit and wait for the next session to happen and work. But then they would start to just form 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4 teams, and they would start to play. And one thing led to another. So guess what? When we would walk outside, there would be several people outside saying, hey, this is in there. Hey, Danny Granger is in there. And next thing you know, the news got a hold of it. They came out there. They done an interview. So I just kind of sat back and thought to myself, wow, this could really be a business. This could be something that we could really do for the city and make sure that it's very solid. You know, where people can come out and watch, and, you know, we get great training, great work, and, you know, add some great referees in the mix. And next thing you know, you have something that's really, really prominent. And at the same time, we had a potential, we had 8 first round draft picks from this area. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, from Josh McRoberts to Gordon Hayward. Hayward Workman. I mean, I'm sorry, not Hayward Workman. Eric Gordon, Gordon Hayward, right. George Hill, Jeff Teague. We had Courtney Lee, you know, Zach Randolph, Shelvin Mack, Matt Howard. I mean, you know, we had a lot of guys that were actually right here. And that was one of the big reasons why it was so successful, because those guys wanted to come and they wanted to come and compete against each other. So that was perfect for us.
You're getting this opportunity to come back to Indiana, where you, at least in my mind, you made your name for yourself there at IUPUI, and then working with George Hill, working with the Fever previously, working with Ron Hunter. Are those some of the people you think about initially when returning back to Indiana?
Absolutely. Indianapolis is like my second home for sure. And those guys mean a lot to me. Each person that you named is very integral in my life. You know, we talk every once in a while, but you know, it used to be a lot more than now, but everybody is busy. You know, people have lives and they have teams to run as well as myself. So it's not every day, all day, like sure. It used to be, but if anyone needs something from anybody, you know, we'll pick up the phone and call, talk to each other and you know, figure stuff out. But for the most part, yes, Indy will always be my second home, and they always embrace me with a warm heart.
And then I got to touch on your relationship with Ketch, of course, because that is a special one. Yeah, you guys are there always for each other in texts or messages or whatever, but especially in her playing days when she needed someone to coach her through things, you were one of them right there that she called and worked with, whether it was her patented 7 a.m. Workouts that always frustrated me because they were so damn early, or even onto the court, you know, 3 hours before a game. How long did that relationship go back? And, you know, what kind of influence has she had on your life?
Well, we don't have enough time to talk about it.
There you go.
You know, she means the world to me. Tamika means the world to me because she is one of those people that has always had my back. I've always had hers. You know, from her playing days, one of the things that we connected on was just, again, the love for the game, the understanding of the game, the respect for the game. Catch is a class act. She always done everything at 100%. She always looked for the right answer if she did not have the right answer. And that's where I came in a lot of times. I was able to play for a long time in college and after. And she was just very interested in getting knowledge from every single person that she could obtain knowledge from. And it was so good for her because she came to me at a time where, you know, I was very open to that. And I came to her at a time where she was very open to that. And our friendship is more like family. It is. I mean, she loves my family like I love her family. And I want to see her successful. If Ketch, you know, picks the phone up and she calls me, I'm there 100%, no matter what. You know, I love her like a sister. And it will never, ever change in that regard. So the last but not least, I want to say that, you know, she is one of those people that matches my energy. She matches my focus in this game of basketball. And I feel like with us together, I don't think that it will ever be a time where we can't get something accomplished on or off the floor. And I look forward to it. And obviously, we're talking about just me and her relationship. Mm-hmm. So never excluding the coaching staff or the organization. You know, that's just me and her. Sometimes we can look each other in the eyes, you know, and say, you know, it's time to go. Let's go. What are we going to do here?
Yeah. And motivate each other a little bit and share honest opinion about what you're both seeing out on the floor with the team.
Absolutely. Yes. So I know big things are coming with her. I mean, you know her. She's a winner, and she's going to continue to have that mindset no matter what. So she'll get it right. We'll get it right, and we'll make sure that we ride off in the sunset the way we always do.
I love it, man. Jared back, now you joining the fray, and of course, Ketch running the whole thing. But good to catch up with you. Congratulations on the new gig that starts this month, and we're really excited to have you back here, back in your second home, as you said, Lowe's.
Yes, sir.
You've heard from Chris Taylor, you've heard from Carlos Knox, and you'll hear from me again later this week. It's a busy time approaching the trade deadline. The Pacers, so much going on with them, losing on the court, how they are handling that, going on their longest road trip of the season, gone for 7 of 8 games. That's very difficult and is a big marker here at their season, which is already past the midway point. And this season clearly has been a huge disappointment for them. And so changes here at the trade deadline, I think, are inevitable. And if there aren't, there better be a damn good explanation. Now, if there's something else you'd like for me to discuss on this podcast, please tweet me at Scott Agnes, or you can send me an email, fieldhousefiles@gmail.com. That will do it for this episode, and I'll talk to you again soon.